This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Marketplace lead is the TV merger that may be fizzling. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. A merger of cable giants, Comcast and Time Warner Cable, appears to be off the table. Several media reports cite sources in position to know, suggesting the union will be abandoned, mainly because U.S. regulators think it would be, in the end, anti-competitive. Marketplace's Annie Baxter is here live with further details. Annie, what did this really run into?
Well, combined, Comcast and Time Warner Cable would have had about 30% of the pay TV market and more than 50% of the broadband market. And that didn't sit well with the Justice Department and the Federal Communications Commission. They worried the merger would hurt competition among cable providers and that it could result in a lousy deal for customers. It might mean higher prices and fewer choices. Big players like Netflix opposed the deal. Concern was that the new Comcast would have the power to gouge them on the price of connecting to its network. It looks like the FCC sounded the death knell for the merger when it said it would put the Comcast-Time Warner Cable deal before an administrative law judge for a hearing. That's a complicated legal process that companies are loath to suffer through. There is some speculation that with this deal falling apart, that Charter Communications might want to renew its bid for Time Warner Cable. That deal had been scuttled by Comcast's maneuvers.
Interesting. Marketplace's Annie Baxter there. The push continues for a countrywide minimum wage, but how low or high should it go? Some argue $9 an hour, others $15. The newest proposal, minimum $12 an hour from Patty Murray, the senator from Washington State. Tim Fitzsimmons has more on the genesis of these things.
In 2012, New York City fast food workers walked off the job and demanded a raise to $15 an hour. Then in 2013, President Obama called for a raise in his State of the Union.
To $9 an hour.
But then at next year's...
$10.10. It's easy to remember. 10-10.
Since then, Chicago and Seattle raised theirs all the way to $13 and $15 respectively, and that pushed us into the realm of the unknown.
The good news is we're going to learn more about how local labor markets adjust to somewhat higher minimum wages.
That's Aaron Dubay, an economics professor at UMass Amherst. He says economists will be watching Chicago and Seattle to see if workers are laid off or if companies move elsewhere, because it's never been raised so high. Senator Patty Murray's plan proposes a raise from $7.25 to $8 next year, then a buck more each year until it gets to $12 in 2020. Gary Bertless is an economist with the Brookings Institution.
Very large majorities of the public think that the current minimum wage is too low and we would be better off if we raised it.
Hiking the minimum wage plays well with voters, even if there's little chance Murray's proposal will pass in this Congress. In Washington, I'm Tim Fitzsimmons for Marketplace.
Checking numbers, the FT 100 in London is up 0.4%. The NASDAQ future is up another 0.6% this morning after closing at a record high for the first time this millennium. In some Middle Eastern countries, including the United Arab Emirates, the local population is relatively small, and an enormous amount of the work in the country is done by foreigners. But how these workers are treated are at the center of an ongoing controversy involving New York University. NYU is part of a trend of private universities setting up satellite campuses in the Middle East. Under pressure, the university and an Abu Dhabi agency commissioned an investigation into whether foreign workers building its new Abu Dhabi campus were being exploited. Last week, the report came out, and it found that in some cases, covering about 10,000 workers, conditions and protections failed to meet the university's own guidelines. Dan Nardello is CEO of the international investigative firm Nardello & Company, which produced the report that found persistent problems in how workers were recruited, treated, and paid. Mr. Nardello, thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here.
New York University has rules governing labor conditions for the people building its satellite campus in Abu Dhabi. You looked into this. What did you find?
In a nutshell, we found that NYU's commitment to enhance labor standards on the construction of its campus was real. It was made in good faith, but the implementation was flawed. there develop what turned out to be a de facto exemption policy. Roughly a third of the subcontractors on the project were exempt from compliance with the labor standards. So that resulted in, if you do the math, around 10,000 workers who were working for these subcontractors who were not covered by the labor guidelines and by the compliance regime.
So there are these guidelines, but because of various definitions, you know, maybe perhaps a worker was working on several projects at once. There was a bunch of those workers to which the guidelines somehow didn't apply.
Yeah, they were the companies they were working for were exempt from compliance. It was in that group of people where we found the most serious violations. Recruitment fees. NYU, in its first public pronouncements, said that they was going to pay recruitment fees for people worked on the project.
Well, I want to understand this. The way it seems to work there is if you want a job on, let's say, the NYU project or some other project over there, often a worker is asked to pay some kind of fee. It's sort of like in Brooklyn when you want an apartment these days. You got to pay a broker fee. So the NYU guide line was, give us a receipt, we'll pay you back for that. But the problem was getting the receipt.
They had to be recruited specifically for the NYU project and had to show proof of payment. The problem with that is because the labor market is so mobile, very few people were recruited specifically for the project. And providing proof of payment from these recruitment agents, and we say this in the report, many of whom are dubious characters, is very difficult.
What do you think, Mr. Nardello? Do you think your report will lead to change?
You know, I go back to what NYU and Tamkeen, the UAE agency, their comments have said. They are going to study our recommendations. They've already made a commitment to pay those workers that were exempt to look at the issue of recruitment fees. So I'm hopeful that there's going to be follow-through on all those issues.
Dan Nardello is CEO of the international investigative firm Nardello & Company. He was brought on to investigate these matters. Mr. Nardello, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
NYU isn't the only institution that's come under fire for worker protections in Abu Dhabi. The Louvre and Guggenheim museums were also singled out by human rights campaigners in connection with the treatment of foreign workers. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our online digital producer is Tobin Lowe. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.